Hello, everybody. I'm Gail Hart. We want to start with the history of midwifery. And well, first, I'm a midwife in Oregon, USA, and I've been a midwife since 1976. So I've been very concerned about midwifery education, obstetrics education in general, because of what is happening to women all over the world. Women seem, in the industrialized nation, have a cesarean rate that is out of any possibility for any species. In the United States, we're running about, almost half, anywhere from 30 to 40%, I think, nationwide. It is 35%. So when I first became a midwife, the cesarean rate nationally was 6%, and that was pretty much true of most of the industrialized nations. And in 1980, we thought we had a crisis because the rate had hit 14%. But around by 1990, we're back up to 25%, and now I say we're closer, in most places, getting closer to 40%. Currently, right now, it's 35%. I know it hit 14% in 1980, and we had a crisis meeting, because we couldn't imagine how it could be so high as 14%. Because in a normal population, almost every woman should be able to give birth without surgery. That's the definition of a species, right? They can reproduce without surgery. A certain number of women have crises in pregnancy. They have ectopic pregnancies or placental abruptions or something that requires a cesarean like placenta previa. There will always be some women who need cesarean sections. And there are the women who will need cesarean sections during labor. But all told, those before labor and those during labor, the researchers argue whether it should be 5%. Some say maybe as much as 10%, but certainly no more. And that was the World Health Organization, a meeting on appropriate technology, where they argued it should be at least 5%, because if it's below that, you might be missing those women with crisis in labor, like the placenta previa, crisis in pregnancy. But beyond 10%, there's no way to justify it. Yet I can't think of a country, industrialized nation, that is less than 10%. So the number of cesareans for crisis and pregnancy has been very stable for generations. What we're seeing now is women in labor who can't give birth without the intervention of surgery. Very few industrialized nations have a rate below 30%. Some of them are hitting 40 and 50%. And especially if you look at first-time mothers, even in the United States, the rate is above 40%. Of every 10 women that come in there, four of them will end up with a cesarean section in labor. The cesarean section can save lives, and we want them to be available for the people who need them. But we must be doing a lot of unnecessary cesarean sections. So the saddest thing that is, in most of the industrialized late nations, the maternal mortality rate has been rising and not falling. In the United States, it has tripled since 1990. At a time, and with very few exceptions around the planet, this is the healthiest generation that has ever lived. We should be able to give birth. So my concern is, it is the unnecessary cesarean which separates the mother and the baby, which changes the microbiome of the baby, almost forever maybe, and set up lifelong health problems. The problems in the next pregnancy and the way that so many women feel about their birth report, that something was lost because they had a cesarean. I'm not talking about the necessary cesarean. I saw that, and that's a very important point. We used to think, well, maybe a cesarean has no consequences. And some women, for social or emotional reasons, they want a cesarean section, and they should be able to have a cesarean section. And even though cesarean is a relatively safe surgery, it's not perfectly safe. But there are these other consequences, like the microbiome, that can affect the baby for the rest of his life. So I don't believe that women have changed. I don't believe that, and I hear that from people saying, oh, women have changed, we've just lost the ability to give birth. I absolutely reject that. I don't think women have changed. I think that the culture has changed, obstetric has changed, and midwifery has changed. We brought medicine into midwifery because we need a combination of medical care when birth requires it. But the mix has not gone well. We have gone out of balance in this last maybe 30 years. And many women feel this lack. I mean, those who have necessary cesareans, well, they're very grateful for them. But for the woman who knows that she could have her baby, that it just would have been this normal thing, it's like, oh, my baby, you know. She's lost that, and the emotional disconnection is almost, I think, a more difficult problem than the physical problems with the microbiome and, you know, complications and risks. So if we need to get birth back to a balance where you have the necessary surgery and the necessary medical intervention, and yet where birth is back in the hands of the mother and back in the hands of the family, That's the balance we have to recover. Because when the woman goes into birth with confidence, without fear, she works with her body, she gives birth to her baby, and that can be a life-changing experience. I mean, I have felt that in myself, and I've seen that in woman after woman. I think that is part of the natural cycle, the natural development of a family and of a woman. In order to find out how to regain the balance, we need to find out how we lost the balance. And that's where looking back in history can show us. We use the term now, and I use it a lot. I feel like we have to reclaim birth. We have to grab it back and bring it back to the province of women. It's something that women do. Go back to history. How did we lose birth? And some have held on to it better, like the Scandinavian countries. And those are the countries with the lowest cesarean rates. So in the historical balance, the midwife helps the woman through normal birth. The doctor helps the baby and mother during a medical birth. It's this partnership between midwifery working with the physiologically normal labor and physicians working with the abnormal labor that makes the perfect thing for mothers and babies. So in the United States, in many places, birth occurred at home, and the woman went to the midwife went to the woman's house to help her birth. Birth occurred within the family, and the baby never left the home unless medical care was required in a hospital, which meant surgery. Jump back a little more than a century ago, there was not any culture in all of human history where women left their home to give birth somewhere else. There's no mammal in which that happens either. No other mammal leaves their home. In some cultures, a woman may step out of her house to the barn or into a little place nearby, but they did not go to some other location with strangers to give birth. It just was never done. I think humans probably learned early that the newborn baby needs to be exposed only to the family's bacteria and not to the stranger's bacteria. And I think they probably learned early about the emotional connection of the birth within the family and friends is different from the birth around strangers. And I suspect that they learned very early that physiologically normal birth has to occur where the woman feels safe, where she feels comfortable, and private and not observed. This is when birth occurs without complications, with the greatest level of safety, with the least risk to mother or baby, especially of her bleeding. That's when babies get born most easily. We see this with every mammal, whether it is cows or pigs or chickens or dogs or cats. Every mammal births best where it feels most comfortable and most safe. Observation of the animals shows us that all you have to do is to bring somebody new into the room where the mammal is giving birth, and we watch the labor process change. If you remove them from their location, they begin to have complications. Their uterus contracts, it becomes, but doesn't progress to birth, and there is much more pain and much more risk involved. Because this is where the correct hormones for birth can work best, is where the woman feels most comfortable and most confident and most safe. We may have a generation, though, that has turned that around, where they become so frightened of birth that they feel safer and more confident in the hospital than at home. And that's an interesting social flip. So the evolution of birth in the technological nations comes from birth at home with medical intervention coming to the home or perhaps taking the woman to the hospital. But that was the basis, and it was midwives and family who attended the births. That's just how it was. So the only women who went to hospitals were women with no family structure, no support, or medical conditions, or perhaps they were actually going to leave the babies there. Otherwise that, nobody would dream of it. So we changed this balance where we have, they called it a maternity hospital, where, say, a woman with a complicated pregnancy might plan to give birth there, might even go live there. And you change and we lose the balance. In most countries, shortly after 1900 and 1920, we have several things happening together. Each of them feeds on each other. And one of them is the, I think there was a loss in the concept of safety after the terrible wars in the early part of the 1900s and after the major influenza epidemic that killed so many people in 1918. I think it caused a trauma to the cultures. You see a worldwide crisis in health in that time period with the epidemics of tuberculosis, 10% of the population, maybe 20, maybe as high as 30% of the population with influenza. How many millions upon millions died in those three great wars between 1895 and 1920, and the economic collapse. Entire nations were destroyed, entire cultures were destroyed. And this is almost a global effect. Across cultures, the families begin to break up. Sometimes all of the older generation has died. There's a loss of all that wisdom that had gone before. So we see change in family structure. We see the enormous changes in economies. and we see the rise of fascism and dictatorships around the world at the same time. And I don't think that it's a coincidence that we see the loss of confidence in women's ability to give birth. And many of our sociologists would say that this is a rise of paternalism as well, of the patriarchy of men taking over women. Birth is done in the families, women give birth, and now, and then it's not. Birth becomes a medical condition, a surgical thing, where women go to the hospital and the babies are taken from them. The separation is so strong in that time period. And then we add one other very powerful intervention, and it is the use of general anesthesia for birth. I think the 1890s, it would have been unthinkable that you would make a woman unconscious for birth. But by 1930 in the United States and in most of the technical nations, most women were under general anesthesia. They had no memory, no experience of giving birth. Chloroform and ether, very strong, very strong. Interesting, the maternal mortality rate begins to jump very, very high. People begin to think that birth is very dangerous, so birth should occur in the hospital. So women's confidence in their ability to birth is gone because they say, birth must be so terrible, please knock me out, I can't stand it. Because of the fear, they have more pain, that creates more fear, they need anesthesia. And because of the complications from anesthesia, the doctors are saying birth is very, very dangerous. Again, you have a destruction in the confidence in birth. Before, when we had the confidence, women just gave birth. When you lose confidence, women, they themselves require medical help because the baby won't come without anesthesia, or so the belief comes. And we need the doctors because who else can give you the anesthesia? So in a generation, women have changed to where birth was the normal thing they did, and now, oh, no, 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 we go to the hospital. So in the United States, you have this, and most other places, but I think the United States was most extreme, where the physicians then began to see midwives as the problem because midwives help women have babies at home, and all babies should be born in the hospital. I believe the way the statistics work is in 1930, 30% of babies were born at home, and by 1960, less than 1%. And you see this pattern in most of the nations, about one generation to go from home as normal to home as almost never heard of, and you see the loss of the midwives. So I'm most familiar with the history of the United States. In the history of the United States, the physicians' associations met and decided to solve the midwife problem because they said, if we get rid of midwives, we get rid of home births. That was how they would do it. I don't think it was even a fight. I think it was a decision that they made. They wanted to take birth away from home and away from the midwives. The American Medical Association called it the midwife problem. And they knew that women wouldn't normally stay home without a birth attendant, so they would have to go to the doctors. And money begins to become involved. And these are good-hearted people. They're not evil. I mean, their motivation, I think, for most of them, was the belief that birth was so dangerous it should occur in a hospital. But money always becomes involved in these decisions. So in the United States, medicine is a business, an economic business, not just to provide health care. And what you saw was in most hospitals, 20% of their income came from normal, uncomplicated labors where women would come in, give birth to a baby, give them hundreds of dollars maybe, and nowadays thousands of dollars and leave. And I don't, like I said, they're not evil people, but I do think that money was part of that motivation. So in the United States, the doctors went on the attack in state after state. They made midwives illegal. We had, I guess we had 48 states at the time. They did state by state. They went to the authorities and said, birth is dangerous. Birth should be a medical surgical specialty. And anybody who delivers a baby is practicing medicine. Only doctors can practice medicine. So the midwives would have argued, a woman could give birth on the sidewalk if her baby comes. She obviously does not need medical help when she has a physiologically normal birth. How can you call birth a medical condition? But they did. And in state after state, in about half of the midwives were made illegal. So in some other states, especially those in the southern states, which were very poor, still are poor, and didn't have enough doctors and hospitals to handle all the births, but they decided, well, let's just, instead of outlawing midwives, let's just license them. So the approach was two. Either in some states, midwifery is the practice of medicine, it is illegal, and in the other, first make it illegal, we will find the midwives and license some of them to do births. So in those states where they made it a crime, but it could be legal if you had a license, they now had control of all the midwives. And it started by, in some of them, it was a volunteer. They said, come here and we will train you. We will give you emergency medical supplies if you come and register and become a licensed midwife. I think there were 10 states that did that approach. And all of them did the same thing about 10 years later. After making it a crime to be a midwife without a license, They then stopped the licensing program so that even the licensed midwives were illegal. So we almost have 48 different countries at that point. Now there's 50 states. Every state has its own government, so all the laws are a little bit different. But in some states, midwifery was always legal, and that's the state where I live in, Oregon. Even in many of those states where midwifery was illegal, there were midwives, but they were underground at the time. But women still wanted them, so it was very almost like selling drugs or something. And it's funny because it still occurs today. You would go to maybe a health food store or maybe a farmer's market where healthy people might be, maybe a church where many people have their babies at home, and you would have a little casual conversation and finally build a little relationship and then go, hey, I'm looking for a midwife. Do you know where one is? It happens today. How did we keep this? So what we had then was there no midwifery books because midwifery is a crime. There are obstetric books, but obstetric books were written for women in the hospital in complicated births under general anesthesia because that's when the doctors began to write the books. So we lose the written record of how to do births. We have the oral record as the midwives teach the younger midwives who teach the younger midwives, but then we have this divide where it's only medical knowledge comes from a medical idea of birth. And then we come to the 1950s, maybe early 50s, and we have this revolution in the social change in the United States. Mostly nonviolent. The hippies, yeah, the 1960s, the nation explodes. Almost social collapse caused by the chaos and opposition to the Vietnam War, the assassinations. I mean, it was a very difficult time in the United States. And people began to question. And women, and this is really cool, we called it the women's movement. Women begin to rise. We were far more oppressed than they were in most of the technological nations. I'm always so pleased and so struck by women in other nations, how you feel very equal to your men, because that's not how it was in the United States. It's still not how it is. Yeah, so we don't really know what that is. It's a Protestant ethic, you know, that men are superior and that women must be below them. But it was very hard to break away from that, and the 1960s was the time when it began to change. Yeah, I don't know if this is widely known, because every nation likes to present itself in its best light, and this was not a good thing about the United States in that time period. I mean, on a personal level, in 1971, in high school, I had college credits for chemistry and biology, and I wanted to continue and take another year in these advanced courses, and I was told, no, these are only available for men. That they made a special thing so that I could continue for an extra year, but no more, because if they gave the space to me, they would have to take it away from a boy. It wasn't going to happen. I used to search out women medical practitioners. In 1975, there was one female dentist in the entire state of Oregon. Only one. A woman physician was almost unheard of, and most of the medical schools that they allowed, if they allowed women at all, they might have a quota, maybe no more than 3%. And only in pediatrics. Yeah, so women in the United States were not under the veil or that sort of an obvious patriarchy, but it was there and it was very strong. And it was a women movement in the 1960s called Women's Liberation, and it changed the culture. It changed the sexual revolution changed the culture. Everything changes. It's a divide between before 1960 and after 1960. In 1960, it was almost impossible to find a midwife. You had to really, really search. Less than 1% of births are happening at home, and no midwives in the hospital, only men obstetricians. And there might have been a couple in the entire nation that were female. Birth was conducted by men, controlled by men, and almost all births done under general anesthesia, or a type of anesthesia that paralyzed them, spinal anesthetic. Similar to epidural now, only stronger. So women just, they lost everything from here to the knees, paralyzed anesthetic. So within this time of questioning everything comes the natural childbirth movement, primarily what was the natural childbirth book by Dr. Grantley Dicreed about 20 years earlier, begins to really take hold. On many levels, women began to realize what they were missing when they were asleep when their babies were born. And even those who were awake began to talk about the trauma of their babies being taken away from them without their involvement. So the natural childbirth movement begins to come. It starts with grassroots with the women saying, you know, I had my baby without anesthesia. And it was really pretty cool. It was the women who began to spread that information. And then other childbirth methods, of course, begin to come along. The Dr. Lamaze with the psychoprophylaxis, which I think started in Russia, goes to France. This idea that you can relax, you can breathe, and hey, you can have your baby. And you have women going to the hospital and saying, I demand natural childbirth. I demand to have my husband with me. They wouldn't let a partner, you had to be married. I demand to have my husband with me. I want my baby right here. I want to nurse my baby when I want. I don't want you to take my healthy baby to the nursery. And they had to fight for it. And then they realized they had to fight for it, and they had to pay for it too. And they would say, the hospital's not going to do anything for me except give me a bed, because I'm going to go in there and have my baby, right? No medic, because I don't need the medicine unless I have a problem. And I will pay $1,000 for it. I'm just going to stay home. They start to stay home. They say, you know what? I'm not doing it. I'm not going to argue with somebody who's going to charge me a bunch of money when I'm the one doing the labor. It's my baby. I'm working. And you're getting all this money and telling me I can't do it? No, I'm going to do it anymore. It starts with the beatniks, and it really takes off with the hippies, because they were willing to question the established order of things. And they had confidence. So they're just staying at home. And they're hoping that, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we still had midwives? But in the meantime, the country people are going, we've always stayed home. What's your big deal? Because mostly in the rural areas and up in the hills, the midwives never disappeared. They were underground. They were always there because women would not have given them up. Women protected them from the law. We exist. We have this thing where you have a growing distrust in the establishment. Women beginning to take their power and decide we can do birth again, and we have these midwives, but they're still hidden in most places, but we're still there. So in 1971, I'm living in a mountain community in a commune, because yes, Americans did communes back then still, and the midwives there, everybody has the babies at home, and the midwives come, they have the babies at home, or people come to the commune to give birth so they can have a home-like birth. And one of my friends is going to have a baby. She says, the midwife says that she should have somebody there to help. And then she didn't have a partner. Asked me to come. And I'm like, well, sure, I'll come. That'd be great. And that's how I meet the midwife. So the midwives who taught me were taught by midwives who taught them, who were taught by midwives who were taught them. Somewhere along the line, there was a friendly doctor who showed them some emergency procedures that they could legally do. And that's how midwifery was taught. These midwives would have been lost in a hospital where a woman was under anesthesia and the doctors were using forceps and stuff. That was not their kind of birth. These were midwives who could work without medication, whose women wanted them to work like that. So I was only 17, but I was strong and I could carry these big pots of water that the midwives wanted. And they asked if I wanted to come along and help them do births. And I was like, well, sure, great. So they gave me their medical books, which are emergency obstetric books. That's how it happened. That's how most of us learned midwifery in that time period. That's how midwifery was passed from midwife to midwife, with some of the written language. But the written books, the textbooks, were written by men who did not know physiologically normal birth. So even then, you had to look at that information in the obstetric texts and decide whether or not it truly applied and was truly real. Because obstetrics is not midwifery. It's a different specialty. I mean, the textbooks would say that a woman begin to, that the cervix dilate to 10 centimeters, and then you can tell the woman that she can push her baby, and she can only push for 2 hours of the first time baby, or else, there's a disaster. That's what the books would tell us. But what the reality that the midwives knew was that the uterus begins to push the baby when the uterus is ready to push the baby. That might be 10 centimeters, it might not, and it might take 10 minutes, or it might take 3 or 4 hours, but as long as the baby is coming and the woman is feeling fine, all is well. There's no black and white number that applies to normal physiologic birth. It's a different thing. And to me, to my mind, the divide even then was very clear. If I need a cesarean section, I want an obstetrician. If I want a normal birth, I go to a midwife. That's it. So it's the 1970s in the United States. The baby boom, which happens after, we call it the baby boom generation, happens after World War II, when between 1930 and 1950, almost nobody's having baby because of the economic collapse of the Great Depression, and then there's the Great War. And so now everybody's having babies, and they're having 5 babies, 6 babies, and we're those babies coming of age. And we're saying, we won't have our babies the way our mothers had our babies. We're women. We know how to do birth. As I said, that time period is a time of revolution in so many ways. It's social, religious, cultural, and it would have been political, but the assassination slowed the political change never happens. I don't think ever happened. If the assassinations had not occurred, and Kennedy, the Kennedy brothers, and King, and oh my gosh, all those 3 or 4 at the same time, we would have universal health care and free education up through college and all those things that we lack now that are really beginning to cause harm in the United States. Yeah, instead we end up with Nixon and Reagan, you know, and rising poverty in the United States and all those that's been happening. But like I say, in that time period in the 1970s is where you really see the resurrection of birth. Even in the hospitals, women have found their voice and they're telling, and they could get the births that they wanted in the hospitals. The obstetricians of the time period, I think, really become convinced finally that natural birth is healthier for the mothers and the babies, and they actually begin to promote it in their hospitals. And it's in this time period that we see midwives begin to go back into the hospital. But first the doctors insist that they must become nurses, and then they can learn midwifery. So then nurses can become midwives. So in my state, the home birth rate was 5%, because like I say, midwifery had always been legal in Oregon, and we had many midwives and a high home birth rate even within the cities. But still, midwives could not work in hospitals. I think it is 1980 or 1981 that they allow the first midwives to work in hospitals. But first, they have to become midwives. At first, they had to become nurses, 3 years of nursing school before they're allowed to learn midwifery. So then we see a divide again, where we have midwives who have always learned midwifery, and they learn by doing births and watching births. And then we have midwives who become nurse midwives. They become nurses. They observe births in hospital, and they do births in the hospital. Two very different types of midwifery. So the first midwives who work in hospitals were actually nurses first who became midwives at home, and then they get the change in the law that now allows them to work in a hospital. It had to be legal change. But I think that's 1980. And very slowly, now over the last 30 years, most states now allow nurse midwives in hospitals. But they are not midwives, they're nurse midwives. And essentially, they do the normal births that are not surgical births, and that's what they do. So birth in the United States changed from this time around the late 70s or early 80s, where there's mostly natural birth at home or in hospital, with midwives at home and nurse midwives in the hospital, beginning to come to the hospital. And now there are many nurse midwives, but birth is a technological event in the hospital. The physiologic and normal birth is a very rare thing in American hospitals now. It's the same as the doctors, and they said that most of them have that same 35% cesarean rate because the hospital birth is under the rules written by the hospital, and the woman is sort of like, she's a non-entity. She just has to conform to the rules. That's how it goes. And there are some wonderful exceptions and some midwives who've been able to make great changes in their hospitals, but by and large, they themselves have been brought into a system that is not really midwifery emphasis. Not physiological birth emphasis. So in the meantime, among the home birth midwives, we've seen a change too in the way that midwifery is taught, an enormous change. And this is my concern. The way midwives were educated when I first learned was you learn from other midwives, and maybe, and then I went through a midwifery school, which was hundreds of births delivered all at home. You attended, you watched, you learned, you had your school a couple of days a week. That's how midwifery had always been taught. Now we've changed. From the 70s through about the late 90s, midwives learned births by doing births, watching with births, and getting their academics at the same time. Now we've switched to follow an academic model where, which is the same thing that the nurse midwives have done, where they go to school for a year or two or sometimes three, they don't see births. So before you learn observing and assisting in birth after birth, and your books are here, but you birth after birth after birth, that's how you learn. Now, book, 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 births at the end. And I don't think you can understand how birth occurs simply by reading a book. So in the 1970s, most of the laws against midwifery were thrown away because the argument was, as long as a midwife is not using medicine, she's not doing medical care, and the woman is having a normal birth at home, that's not a medical act. Midwives move right on in. Women have wanted us, so there we are. And that's how you teach the new generation of midwives, by taking her along, maybe 50, maybe 100 births, maybe more, before she is considered capable of doing births on her own. So in the time, in state after state, midwifery is now legal again, and we see the rise of midwife associations who set standards within their groups while midwives teach midwives teach midwives. That's the standard. Most states have their own associations, but they found similar standards, and some of them did their own examinations, but each group sets its own thing. The midwives help midwives, and the midwives help to teach more midwives, to teach better midwifery. Some states might say the midwives in our association do not do breech births, or they only do, say, frank breech births for women who've already had babies. And another group may say, no, all women who have a breech will go to the hospital if we have time to get her there. Just depending upon their individual assessment and the consensus of the group. It was grassroots midwifery, and I think you could say that it was led by the mothers themselves, really, these local associations. And I think we see a very safe midwifery rising from this because the midwives are teaching themselves. They are influencing each other to do the safest. First, one midwife may have a lot of a breech experience. She teaches another midwife. We had, in most of these associations, they would have educational opportunities, you know, every month or two, so that they, so they study within themselves, they have academic training, and they do certification within their associations. Across the nation, you have wonderful home birth and midwife statistics for safety and for very low transport rates, maybe 1 or 2% in labor at most. A philosophical change that says we will teach academic midwifery because, I don't know, is an academic midwifery better than just learning how to do it? Like I say, it's a philosophy. Midwives will go to school for 1 or 2 or 3 years, most of them for 3 years. They don't do live births, though. They just learn from the books. So with the two different kinds of midwives, the idea is that a woman will get her academic training, and then she will go off and find a midwife that she can work with so that she can begin to see live births. The reality, though, is that because of a new certification that is being presented in within the various states, they may come from a school and have seen maybe 20 births. I think they started initially with 10, and then 20 in which they deliver. Maybe if another dozen or so. So maybe in the total of their training, books first, then births, maybe they've seen only 40 births total. This wouldn't be totally unacceptable in earlier years. Because you cannot, you can't understand what you read from the book until you see it over and over again. Birth is a physiological event. It's not a medical event. How do you understand what you're seeing when you have just read, especially if you have been studying disasters and obstetrical emergencies? How do you look at the woman before you and understand even the normal process of birth that she's going through? If she says, oh, this is a really strong contraction, it's really painful, your brain may be thinking, oh, her uterus is about to explode, or she has a placental abruption, or what? You can't understand it. So we were beginning to see this divide between the apprentice-trained midwife and the midwife who learns from the book and then goes see some births. And it's a divide not just in philosophy, but in actual knowledge. The experienced midwife who has also had the academic training can tell something, say, as simple as, say, ruptured membranes and how safe that is to have long ruptured membranes. The midwife who has learned from the book says, oh, the book says 24 hours, we're done. Because the information in the books, remember, it came from the obstetric model. And although a few books have been written by midwives since, they were primarily either learned it from the obstetric model or obstetric textbooks. So here's where women are being harmed. If your book says the woman must deliver within 24 hours of ruptured membranes, or maybe your book says she can only push for 2 hours, the midwife from that training begins to intervene. She begins to augment labor. She begins to stimulate the labor with herbs or perhaps with medications. And this puts the woman at risk because she no longer has the physiologic labor. She's on somebody's timetable. So I'm a person that I really like statistics. I like to see the numbers. What I see upon that particular midwifery academic model is a transfer rate of 20% or more of women in labor and a cesarean rate quite high. And yet, in the other model, we see a transport of women in labor maybe 1 or 2% of the time. Most of those women requiring a cesarean section because if you can't give your birth at home, you can't get the baby out at home, they're not going to be able to do it at the hospital. Now we have these high transfer rates. So I'm concerned about that because we are, if anything, we might be even seeing a slightly higher rate of babies that that have damage in labor in this academic trained model than we did with the hands-on model. We see an increase in babies with problems in the academic trained midwives. In other words, birth was not made safer at all. And that was the goal, to have a standardized, you know, book-based midwifery so that midwifery birth would be safer. But that's not what's been happening. As a midwife, I'm worried about losing the knowledge base that we had, the simple hands-on skills that we have that have to be passed on midwife to midwife. There's becoming holes in midwifery education, and I really want to make sure we don't lose it. So that's why I'm excited to do online midwifery education, because it allows us to talk again face-to-face, if not hand-to-hand, but at least to begin to retain this knowledge and to spread it along. And just spread it again. An ironic twist of fate, we are now beginning to see midwives again outlawed in the United States. As strange as that could be, but it's happening again. In only a few states, midwifery was a crime, and now in many states it is a crime, but you could become a legal licensed midwife and not be outlawed, but we're getting an underground movement of midwives again. People that are educated in a particular type of midwifery are the ones that are pushing the licensing. So it seems to have just come. I think a lot of it is the idea of control. Physicians and groups that are very upset that women just want to have babies and that they found midwives who will work with them to have babies. They want, and the expression is always, midwifery should be licensed, controlled, and regulated. And we have now a rise in home birth among women who say, I can't find a midwife who will let me have the kind of birth that I want to have. My midwives are too controlling, they're too regulated. So it used to be that a midwife was always an individual relationship with that individual woman. And she had an association of midwives around her to help with education and training and standards. And now we are getting a legal license controlled midwifery where the state bureaucrats are making the laws for the midwives, many of which the midwives don't agree with, but the laws become laws. And then the law takes precedence over your relationship with the woman. It's very strange, within the last 10 years, about half of the United States now, midwifery's made illegal again, licensed with laws written by bureaucrats. It's unthinkable that could happen, but it has, and there's a movement to make that across the entire nation. And the philosophy that I would have is that the woman is in control of her birth, and I help her. That's my job. I use my skills and my first aid for when the medical emergency comes. The other philosophy is that the state government is in control of the midwives, and the midwives are in control of the birth. That doesn't work for many women. It doesn't work for me. We may be poised on another birth revolution in the United States where women say, no, this is my right, this is my birth, I do it my way, home or hospital, midwife or no, it's my birth, don't tell me what to do. They're even beginning to speak those words, birth revolution, everywhere, because human beings are very funny. We go this way until we go, oh, no, that's bad. Oh, no, now we'll go this way. And we go, no, that's bad. No, and we work our way this way. And always, I believe very strongly that humans get better and better and better in our evolution. We just get better. But we make bad mistakes, and then we make that bad mistake. We'll get back. I mean, in the bad days, before, say, surgery and transfusions and ambulances and all that, women suffered in childbirth. You know, babies were damaged. Sometimes women died. And then we said, well, okay, good. Now we got medical care. That's great. Oh, now everybody needs medical care. Every birth is medicated. Oh, now we're seeing babies and women harmed again because too much medication. We have to go back to that normal balance again. I mean, I just look at the numbers. Maternal mortality rate in the United States has tripled in the last 15 years. It's rare, but for every mortality, there's a morbidity. A woman who's very, very sick, who had problems, who did not die, we shouldn't be getting that. And we've seen that because of the rise of inductions and augmentation with Pitocin and medically managed labors. It's gone too far. That way. So we're probably getting late in this, but I want to bring up the other issue that I think is very important is that the bonding of the mother and the baby and the people at the birth, the father, the siblings that are there, is a crucial part of the emotional development of a human being. And if we don't have that, we get a generation of children who will always find it difficult to form friendships and relationships and trust between them and another human being. They're emotionally handicapped. The perinatal psychologists, the early child psychologists, would tell us about the importance of birth as setting the emotional stage for that baby for the rest of his life. There may be traumatic birth or surgical birth, and we have to help those babies overcome that trauma. But in general, if a birth can occur in peace and in gentleness and the physiology, you have the best chance of having a person with a strong emotional development. We have physiologists like Dr. Michel Odant calling loud attention to the fact that the oxytocin present at birth is the highest it will ever be in the mother's life or in the baby's life, and that this chemical, this naturally produced chemical and hormone, it helps to control us and set a pattern within us of love and trust for between one human being and another. That's crucial. The births which occur in crisis and adrenaline and in surgery and in artificial oxytocin, the Pitocin, may be fighting against this and eliminating the natural oxytocin. So we have an emotional handicap from the moments of our birth. We have psychologists that can help people overcome if they were traumatized at their birth, but we shouldn't have to overcome it. We are naturally programmed to have normal, healthy births. That's our biological evolution, our biological destiny. Almost every time, birth should be simple, uncomplicated. It just happens. It can be easy, it can be hard, but it should be successful almost all the time. Not 30% of women needing cesarean sections. The basic divide in philosophy is that my job as a midwife is to get out of the way and help the woman give birth, to allow the birth to happen within my presence. That's my job. But that's not the understanding of the medical management of birth. I believe so strongly in the power of birth as a force to change society that I think that we really need to bring our efforts back to this natural birth and the natural bonding that is supposed to happen. So there are social anthropologists who believe it was not a coincidence that in the industrialized nations, the cruelest generations, the ones who created so much havoc, were those generations that were delivered under general anesthesia, the babies born between 1900 and 1940. Yeah, it may be a simple coincidence, but it is interesting that you see that time period coincide. Some people believe that. We used to have a saying in the, you know, of course, there's a whole peace and love, you know, time in the United States, but that peace on earth begins with birth. I do believe that. So whether the birth occurs at home or hospital or somewhere in between, like a center, the family that takes responsibility for their pregnancies and for their birth and to fall in love with their babies and let that be the most important thing in their life, that has a ripple effect, I think, throughout the community and throughout the culture. So I personally believe so strongly in the influence of bonding at birth and the influence of the hormone oxytocin, I have done something very extreme. And what I have done, yeah, it is the oxytocin molecule. And I'm not the kind of person who does a tattoo. I came and I shocked my husband. Yes, it is to help me remember how important this is. And so many times I've been able to have a conversation with people about this. This is what it's about. It is about falling in love with your babies at birth. Normal physiological birth is the basis of the family. What's more important than that? Nothing. So we're not just animals. We're not totally controlled by our hormones. We have a thinking brain. You can fall in love with a baby that wasn't your newborn. But you know what? Your biology is programmed to do it. And when we work with our biology, we work best. It's that simple.